Welcome. Naomi Goldstein is with us today. She's the director of the Office of Planning, Research, and Evaluation within the Administration for Children and Families, or ACF, at the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. For those who aren't familiar with ACF, it's essentially the human services side of the Department of Health and Human Services. Naomi Goldstein is one of the most respected voices in the field of evaluation within the federal government. She's a graduate of Yale and earned her MPP and PhD in public policy from Harvard. In 2012, she was awarded the presidential rank of Distinguished Executive, an award given by the president to senior federal employees for sustained extraordinary accomplishment. Naomi, welcome and congratulations on that terrific and well-deserved award.
Thank you, Andy. I really was delighted to get this award. And I have to say, although I am proud of my work and the work of my wonderful staff, I truly was humbled to see the accomplishments of the other award winners. And I'm really thrilled that this award recognizes the importance of evaluation in the federal context. It's so important that we learn from what we're doing and learn to do it better.
And on that note, I want to get your input into how agencies, whether the federal, state, or local levels, can build their evaluation capacity. In other words, how can they strengthen their ability to learn what works, to determine if their programs are having the impact that they want, to use that information to continually improve programs? What are the key ingredients that are important to building a robust evaluation capacity?
Well, I think there are a number of factors. So one, you have to have funding and legislative authority to be able to carry out evaluations. It's really helpful, perhaps critical, to have commitment, ideally from the top levels of the agency, to learning and to conducting evaluations in order to learn what works and what works best. You need staff with some level of expertise. You need capacity among potential contractors and grantees. Typically, we can't carry out evaluations entirely in-house, so you need to have a robust private sector that can actually do the work, that has the skill and the capacity. And you definitely need cooperation from service providers, people who are doing things that are of interest to evaluate. They've got to be on board. They've got to be willing to partner and have their services evaluated. And we've found that service providers are enthusiastic. Not all service providers are enthusiastic, but many service providers are willing and enthusiastic partners who want to join us in learning how to do things better.
And are there any misconceptions, so to speak, about what it takes or doesn't take to create a robust evaluation capacity?
Well, people sometimes think that you can't use rigorous methods for assessing the effectiveness of human services for a couple of reasons that I don't think are valid. One, sometimes people say, well, you know, it's just not like taking a pill. Human services are complicated. You tailor their services to individual or family needs. How could you really understand in a simplistic way what works and what doesn't? And it's true, it's not simple, and you can't understand it in a simplistic way, but you can use, for example, experimental methods. For example, often a state or a locality will want to try something new, some new improved approach to, say, helping people find work. So you might want to roll that out in a staged fashion. You know, if you don't know if your new approach is going to be better than your old approach, there's no reason why you have to start a new approach, say, statewide. You could do it on a pilot basis, and you could use an experimental design where some people get the new approach, some people get the old approach, and then you see how things turn out for those people. And if the new approach works better, then you can roll it out on a broader scale. So that's something that might surprise people, that you really can do this even in complicated human services environments.
And there are often situations in which there aren't enough resources to serve everyone, you know, in a state or in a community. And in that case, a randomization process, a lottery, in other words, can be the fairest way to distribute resources. And that lottery is just what you need to create a randomized control trial where you have a program group and a control group. And at least you can learn whether these services actually make a difference.
And we make it a core principle of our experimental evaluations that no fewer people will be served as a result of the evaluation. So different people may be selected for service, but as you said, it's in an experimental evaluation. It would be a process like a lottery that determines who gets served. And that is fundamentally a pretty fair way to go. It's even possible to build in, you know, some kind of prioritization based on risk, or to exempt certain types of people, you know, say perhaps referrals from the child welfare system might be an example. If there are certain categories of families that you really feel, you know, as a matter of principle or a matter of urgent need, shouldn't be subject to a random assignment process, you can exempt some of those people.
Running experiments in social science, in other words, using randomized control trials, as you know, has become much more standard over the last few decades. Nonetheless, there are strong proponents. There are also critics. How can we learn from ACF's experience in terms of how you've prioritized the use of experimental methods versus non-experimental approaches or quasi-experimental approaches?
According to our evaluation policy, rigor requires ensuring that conclusions about cause and effect are well-founded. That's what's known as internal validity. So you have to isolate to the greatest extent that you can the impacts of the services that you're evaluating from other influences like trends over time, variation from place to place, or pre-existing differences between participants and non-participants. And experimental approaches are the most reliable way to do that. There are circumstances where experimental approaches are not feasible, and then you want to do sort of your second best. You want to use a high-quality quasi-experimental approach or other approaches. But when you can, an experimental approach gives you results that you can have the most confidence in. It's also important to recognize that rigor is not restricted just to evaluations that are looking at cause and effect. You want to also be rigorous when you're doing an implementation evaluation, a descriptive study, and in both qualitative and quantitative approaches. So you want to be sure that you're using measures that accurately capture what you're trying to capture. You want to be clear about the population and the settings and the circumstances to which you can generalize your results. There are a lot of different aspects of rigor. I think sometimes when people question the importance of experimental methods, what they're really questioning is a narrow focus on impact evaluations. So if what you want to know is the impact of a service, an experimental approach is the best way to understand that. But whether you use an experimental approach or a non-experimental approach, it is a valid point to say that you want more than just information about whether something works. You also need some rich information about what the thing is, you know, what actually happens on the ground, what happens when services are provided, what's the context, what do we think are the key elements. So an impact evaluation alone is not as useful as an impact evaluation combined with a rich implementation or process evaluation.
Final question for you, Naomi. You've noted that creating a healthy and productive relationship between evaluation staff on the one hand and program staff on the other takes some finesse. Tell us about that and tell us some techniques that you've used to try and bridge those gaps.
Collaboration between evaluation and program staff is critical, both to ensuring that evaluations are pursuing questions that are of interest and to understanding how to make sense of and use evaluation findings. I think it's important to recognize that there are differences in culture as well as commonalities in mission. So here at the Administration for Children and Families, program offices and our evaluation office share a commitment to helping low-income children and families. But there are differences in culture, in the pace of work, in language, in worldview. So program staff fundamentally are about doing things, and evaluation staff are all about learning things. And obviously those are related, but they are different. So typically program staff need to know things yesterday, and we can offer results perhaps in a few years. So that can be frustrating to both sides. We try to keep up an ongoing conversation about what program staff want to know, what evaluations are showing, what evaluation results mean for programs, and what the program's priorities and challenges mean for evaluation. So communication across these different contexts and worldviews and different pressures takes ongoing commitment from both sides to really build long-term constructive relationships.
We'll end this portion of the interview here, but the conversation's going to continue. I'm going to ask Naomi some questions related to the intersection between evaluation and performance measurement and management, and I'll post her answers on the blog as a web extra. But for now, Naomi Goldstein from the Administration for Children and Families, thank you very much for being with us and for sharing your insights.
Thank you. I enjoyed it.